This is Referee's World with Darren Cullum and Richard Mellon.
Hello again and welcome to the Referee's World podcast. My name's Darren Cullum. I'm a level 5 referee with Somerset FA. And this is my mentor and Somerset FA's county training officer, Richard Mellon.
Hello, Darren.
How the devil?
I'm well.
You had to think about whether you're well or not at the moment.
Yeah, bit of a tough question that to start with.
So, coming up in this episode, we've a couple of announcements from UEFA, which you may sort of want to get yourself stuck into. One or two match incidents to discuss involving myself, in one of them at least. We've got some emails from the opposite side of the world that we would like to answer. A few of your Twitter shouts and Facebook mentions as well. But we're going to start with a short tribute to one Jack Taylor, who sadly passed away recently.
Yeah, sad passing away of Jack Taylor. Well known in English refereeing circles. A legend, I think, is definitely appropriate. It's a word that's often used too easily, but I don't think this is the case in this one. Jack was well respected by everybody I can imagine in football. I often come into contact with him fairly frequently, 3 or 4 times a year at games. He was an ambassador for the Football League, having served his time as a referee with great distinction. He was a butcher by profession and refereed the World Cup final in 1972 in Munich between West Germany and Holland. He gave a penalty in the first minute to Holland and was known famously for cautioning Johan Cruyff at halftime for comments made by Johan Cruyff.
Do we know what those comments were?
I'm afraid no, I don't have that sort of information available, Darren. But yeah, hugely respected gentleman. And I use that word again, he was a gentleman. He was always gracious, always welcoming, and he had time for everybody. And I think that's a real quality of the man.
Well, how do you think Jack Taylor viewed the game as it is today compared to when he was on top of his game?
Never got into deep conversations with Jack about how it had changed from his time as referee. But what was evident from my contact with Jack, that he was always moving along with the game and the new trends and the, you know, the tactics of what referees had to adapt to, and he was very much in touch with everybody, and you know, he was regularly at games 2 or 3 times a week, and worked with anybody and everybody. So he will be missed.
What were, for those that don't know much about Jack Taylor, what were Jack's strengths as a referee?
He was a huge man in stature. Well, he was very approachable, and I think these are traits that we look for in referees nowadays. But he was assertive, an imposing figure, knew his stuff, knew he had thorough knowledge of what he wanted to do. And to referee the World Cup final in 1972, some of us can only dream about that.
Was he ever subject to the kind of media abuse that comes the way these days of some referees?
Well, not to my knowledge, because the way in which the media now covers the game is totally changed from those days of 30, 40 years ago. But nonetheless, it was well covered because, you know, if I use it carefully, colour TV came in round about the 1966 World Cup. That's when I can remember, when I was a young lad. And obviously in 1972, you know, The focus was on West Germany and Holland for the final, because it was a competitive game on paper, and it proved certainly that. And much to the pleasure of everybody in the FA, Jack Taylor was appointed as referee, and you know, that is the highest accolade any individual, I think, can actually receive. Jack Taylor, for his continuous work, relentless. He never had a weekend off, as far as I can recall, during the football season. And he is in the Hall of Fame for the PGMO. He's put in the Hall of Fame a few years ago when that was introduced. And as I say, I think I mentioned that he was an ambassador for the Football League. And he was always liaising with clubs and building bridges for referees. And like I say, the work he's done is absolutely colossal. And in this short conversation that we've had on the podcast, really can't play enough recognition to the work of Jack Taylor. But you know, what he has done, he's left a great legacy, and he is a legend.
From grassroots to the World Cup, this is the Referees World podcast with Darren Cullum and Richard Mellon.
So, moving on then, we've got a couple of announcements from UEFA that we want to talk about, Rich.
Yeah, just briefly, I just want to announce, and I'm going to read it here, but very briefly, the additional assistant referees is a success story for UEFA.
This is quite interesting, because there was pros and cons for this, wasn't there, when it first happened?
Yeah, but nothing ever's going to be perfect. right from the start. It has to be progressed. It has to have a process. And looking at the the information here, UEFA are satisfied with the progress of the system, and that's what they've described. It's progress of the system, which gives match referees two additional sets of eyes to help them in their decision making.
So does this mean that perhaps goal line technology may not come in, or the two extra referees is bound to be a cheaper option for a lot of clubs, isn't it?
Well, I'm not too sure about the development of the additional assistant referees in other associations around the world, and anybody listening could probably give us a little bit of information back about that if it's happening within their FA. And but what UEFA are looking at the moment is the fact that it is considered a success, but goal line technology has been passed if an association, if a competition want to use it. It's not compulsory that it has to be used, but it is there and it has been approved as of season 12-13. So, the additional assistant referees is proving to be a success, but it is a development programme. And, you know, we have to be patient. We have to look for the positives and not focus on the negatives, because that's too easy for everybody to do.
Is there an argument, though, for a lot of clubs that obviously are not going to be able to afford goal line technology? Is there an argument that perhaps they may decide, okay, Premiership will have goal line technology, but Championship from downwards maybe have the extra referees?
Well, you're opening up a little can of worms here, Darren.
That's a bit naughty of you there.
But cost is obviously a huge thing that has to be considered. Now, how much is this going to cost? I don't personally know, but someone somewhere has got an idea of what the cost will be. And let's say it could be hundreds of thousands of pounds. Mm. That's my guess. When will it be introduced? Will it be introduced? That only time will tell. But the other thing I point out to you, how many times would we need goal line decisions through goal line technology per season? What do you reckon?
It's, I don't know, two or three maybe, if that.
That's a lot of money for just two or three decisions.
It is.
So let's think about then, what about the idea of additional assistant referees? Mm. Do you think that might catch on?
Well, I mean, if it's proven to be a success and UEFA have given it the go-ahead, it's going to be a lot cheaper for some of the clubs if they want to go down that route. I'm a great believer, personally, in keeping it as it is, because that's how the game always was. There's always going to be an element of human error, isn't there?
Sure, there is always that element of human error, but we're always striving for the perfect performance. So, you know, what could make our performances better? If we had extra pairs of eyes, I think that's certainly worth considering. And resources is going to be a focus as well, because at the end of the day, if we don't use goal line technology here in the UK, what will we use, or will we just stay as we are? There's lots of to's and fro's here to consider. Goal line technology has got, obviously, a part to play, but the cost... So if we don't have goal line technology, would we go to assistant referees, additional assistant referees? Again, that's about resources. And then there's a cost involved with that as well, because you've got two extra match officials. Training of those match officials, you know, what will they be expected to do? We do know what the guidance is from UEFA for these guys.
I suppose there is one good advantage about having the match officials is the fact that there'll be more referees needed to come up through the system.
Very much.
So that's a real positive.
That's why I mentioned about resources. Mm. Now, I'll quote what I know from the FA's point of view here. We have 28,000 qualified referees here in England. Now, we only have around about, I think it is something like 1,500, maybe 2,000 working from level four upwards. So look at where there's a lot of resources of, say, 25, 26,000 qualified referees being used at grassroots. Now, how many of those people at grassroots would be interested in progressing up the ladder to that sort of status? And so consequently, if we have a lot of people interested going from that core group of 25, 26,000 going towards the higher areas of football, then we need more resources to replace the resources that want to move on. And, you know, we have all sorts of reasons for progress and promotions already in place, and that will then increase even further.
Would that put a strain on local FAs, though? Obviously, because you'd need more assessors, you'd need more...
Of course it does. You're now looking at the wider picture when we're not just talking about referees here. We're talking about looking for quality. How do we look for quality? Through assessments, through coaching, through mentors, and everything related to that. So, you know, the resources thing is a big thing for us here in England. Whilst we have 28,000 qualified referees, which is a very, very healthy number, we still need a lot more if we were to feed the idea of additional assistant referees.
But it's going in the right direction. The conversation that we had with Ian Blanchard recently, he was stating some figures about how it's increased steadily over the last couple of years. So again, there's another positive.
Yes, it is. But the other thing that we have to be mindful of is, and not complacent within football, is that whilst we know that football is a very healthy hobby for some referees and it's a business for others, there are other attractions out there whereby, people can go, let's say, play golf, even look at the Olympics. The Olympics have been a huge success this year for the UK. And the take-up...
I'm not sure the football side of it was. but there's a can of worms. Yeah, let's leave that one.
There's another penalty kick competition that we can talk about. But that's another story. But the success of the Olympics will draw people towards those sports. Mm-hmm. And it will also draw people towards being an official of those sports. So, the population of the UK can only do so much, surely. Mm-hmm. But like I say, when we look at football, we try to look after ours with a good image and protect the standards that we have. I think we'll come back to this conversation at another time, Darren.
Yeah, okay. Another announcement from UEFA, which is quite interesting as well, which you were telling me about before we started to record the show.
Yeah, I'm going to read this one out. And it's called Core Trains with UEFA Referees. Core meaning Centre of Refereeing Excellence. Potential European international referees for the future are being given crucial early experience and training as part of UEFA's Centre of Refereeing Excellence, which is called the CORE programme. The successful CORE programme is embarking on its third season, which will run until August 2013, and is remaining true to its aim of developing the skills and fitness of potential European international referees from the future. Having made that quote from information that I pick up offline, I'm going to have a look a little bit further and see if I can find out a little bit more information about that and feed it out and see,
Isn't this just like a high-level academy?
Yes, it is. Yes, let's call it that if you wish at the moment. But I want to have a look at it a bit more because obviously there are people listening here and we'll talk about our colleagues here in the UK at the moment who may be interested in this. But is it anything else happening around the world like this? I'm sure UEFA are not the only body that are looking at this idea, and I feel sure that our colleagues in the Southern Hemisphere might have something similar. And if colleagues listening down in Australia, New Zealand, Singapore and those areas, if you're listening and you know of these sort of things, let us know.
Get in touch, and you can do that various ways by following us on Twitter at Referees World. You can obviously tweet us and mail us directly there. We have a Facebook page as well, facebook.com/Referees World, or you can email us through the website refereesworld.co.uk. They are the ways in which you can get hold of us. Don't forget as well, if you're a new listener, thanks very much for finding us. Thanks very much for downloading the podcast. You can listen on iTunes. Just subscribe to iTunes to Referees World, and then every time it updates or we come up with another episode, it will automatically come down to your iPhone, your iPad, your iPod, etc. Otherwise, you can listen online, refereesworld.co.uk. Right, let's move on to a couple of tweets that we've picked up on, some questions of yours. First of all, just like to say hello to Dave Evans. Thanks very much. Dave says, is there a website or a book, this is great actually, is there a website or a book with some referee promotion exam questions that I can go and look just to build up my confidence? Well, if there isn't, I've got one thing that you can do, which I'll tell you about in a sec. Rich.
Okay, right. Let's cut this one quite quick then. There's nothing official at the moment, but I think I know what you're going to say, Darren. I'll ask you to quote that now.
Basically what I did, I'm not very confident when it comes to going into exam situations, okay? I've talked to colleagues about this and some kind of agree. You go into that exam situation and you kind of lose the basic bits that you know that you would have if you were on the field of play out there doing it, because it comes naturally to you. So what I did is just emailed my local FA and said, have you got any old exam papers that I can test myself on? And that was fine. And I put myself in exam conditions to do that. I didn't see the point in running over the time allotted or cheating with it, because it's not going to achieve anything. And then I sent the exam back and he marked it and sent it back to me. So that's how I did it.
Okay. Well, the only thing I would ask Dave is, and he's talking about promotion here. I'm not sure if Dave's moving from level 7 to 6 or 6 to 5 or is it an exam that he needs for level 4 status? I don't know. So Dave, get back in touch with us. Let's find out and we'll see if we can develop this for you. But in the meantime, what we would suggest is contact your local RDO, the referee development officer for your county. Mm-hmm. Ask him if he's got some old exam papers so you can get an idea of the format. Mm-hmm. But having already passed the referee's exam, you pretty well know that format. But it's just getting your mindset in a comfortable way as regards, you know, having to work under those pressures.
Right, some more tweets of yours. In fact, we've had quite a few about this. I sent a tweet out at the beginning of the season asking for people's thoughts back on any problems that may have occurred due to law changes. And the one that I'm talking about is obviously the tape around the socks. I think the general consensus is, yes, there's been a few teams that have decided to try and, you know, play the system a bit and try and ignore it and try and get away with it, therefore causing a bit of aggro for referees and so on and so forth. But that's been quite a popular topic, Rich.
Mm. How proactive are you as a referee?
With regards to the tape?
Our listeners as well.
Me personally, I'm quite tight with it. I, you know, enforce it.
Okay.
And that's purely because my local FA have really made a point of saying, we really want you to pull your socks up, no pun intended there, with this one, and make sure that it happens.
Yeah, good pun though. Well, the thing is, let's go back a month or two now. Here we are, September. Now, pre-season. Mm-hmm. Okay, pre-season, everybody knows about the law changes because they are released in time to get everything sorted out. Pre-season, this is when we should be getting the message across as regards the law changes. Okay, people might not like the changes, but at the end of the day, we're tidying it up and keeping it tidy. That's what the aim will be. Now,
personally, I haven't had any problems.
That's because I think the message is being pushed around by every referee, you know, and not just one or two. You know, I don't particularly see an issue with tape around the socks. Other colleagues might say, well, you know, I've had the problem. Well, it's not a problem if you're proactive with it and you get to the ground and you start talking to people as early as possible. Make sure they don't come out with it on. Then you don't have the problem to deal with.
Right, moving on then. A tweet here from Football Ref, spelled F-U-T-B-A-L, says, player laying on the ground, heads the ball to the keeper who picks it up. Is this legal?
Well, I think you could answer this question, Darren, without having to consult with me, because...
Well, I'd say yes.
Yeah, of course.
He's headed it back, so...
He's headed the ball. I mean, let me use jargon or layman's terms here. The passing of the ball to the keeper, it's kicked to the keeper. Kick. So it could come off the shin, could come off the knee, could come off the thigh... Headed, chest, anything like that. If it's not a trick, if it's not a deliberate trick to circumvent the laws, there was no infringement. Mm-hmm. Heading the ball back to the keeper, laying on the floor, just an appropriate position, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Can we just do a little mention here for Northampton referees who've tweeted to say they've got a new website. They're looking for some feedback, please. They've got various new bits on there. Northamptonreferees.org.uk. And finally for this batch, Ben Cushion says, pulling in the box before a corner or a free kick is taken... Is that a penalty?
Before the kick is taken?
Before the kick is taken.
Give me your answer, Dan.
I'd say no, because the ball's not in play.
Correct. Yeah. The ball has to be in play to award a free kick or a penalty kick, if that's what it's going to be. So you cannot give a penalty kick if the ball's not in play. If the corner kick hasn't been taken, how can you then change your mind and give a penalty kick? It's not possible. You shouldn't be doing that.
It's the Referees World podcast with Darren Cullum and Richard Mellin. Don't forget you can get in touch through our website, refereesworld.co.uk. Listen on iTunes, or of course you can listen online as well. Right then, some match incidents to discuss shortly, but we've also got a couple of emails from different parts of the world that we'd like to discuss as well. Rich?
Yeah, there's one there that I think initially started with yourself and our colleague Jewelman. In Singapore, I think that's where he's based.
Oh, this one.
I'll pin this one on you, Darren, because I think you've provoked this comment from Jewelman. But Jewelman introduces himself. He likes the podcast. And thanks for listening, Jewelman, down there in Singapore. And he does ask a couple of questions. Do you want to elaborate?
Yeah, this is the question that I particularly like. It says, by the sound of the voice, I was expecting Richard Mellon to be a bold and skinny. Was that picture on your website taken 15 years ago? Anyway, I truly enjoy listening to you guys and picking up the good tips. So keep up the good work all the way from the sunny island, Singapore.
Well, bold and skinny, I suppose I'd like at least to be one of those two things. I'm certainly not wanting to be bald.
Yeah.
But I'm certainly not skinny.
No. Actually, although I have to congratulate you on your weight loss that you have done.
Thank you.
So, in fact, I actually quite fancy you at the moment.
Oh, no, no, don't go.
Let's not go down that route. Right, what was the other question that he asked for?
Okay, we've asked Jewelman to give us a little bit of background as regards the setup down there in Singapore. And Jewelman is of the experience level whereby he works on the S League, and that's the professional league down there in Singapore. That's how I understand.
And what would that be the equivalent to?
That's our national league. That's their national
league.
Yeah. So he operates as an assistant referee on there. He's a class one colleague by description. And I asked for a little bit of classification and numbers in Singapore. He says, in his reply, he tells me, as of now, there are about 150, 160 Football Association Singapore registered referees, 13 of them which are FIFA referees or assistant referees. There are only three classes, starting from class three and all the way up to class one before getting into FIFA.
In terms of relatability, that's quite high, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Considering the amount of referees that are registered there, and 13 of them are FIFA registered.
That's a healthy percentage.
That is very good.
I mean, if there's 13 out of 150, 160 FA Singapore registered referees, what's that? Just a bit more than... Just a bit less than 10%.
Which we're both trying to work that maths out here. I can't do it.
Mathematics isn't good for me at the moment, is it? But that's a very healthy percentage.
That's very good,
imagine if we had that sort of percentage here with 28,000. You know, we'd have too many people travelling. You know, we'd probably have a private airline, the FA private airline.
Brilliant.
But, yeah, good to hear from Jewelman. And despite his comments about my my baldness and being a little bit overweight, but good to know that you're listening out.
Yeah, thanks very much for listening. Wherever you are in the world, actually, we have people listening to the podcast in the last we looked, this is according to Google statistics, by the way, 74 different countries where people are listening regularly. So wherever you are in the world, thanks very much for listening and taking time to listen to the podcast.
I've got the other email here at the moment I've been corresponding with, and that's David Figliano in Ontario, but he's in the Northern Hemisphere, this gentleman. David came on to me and started asking a couple of questions, and I bounced back a couple of questions to him. And what we decided to do, I thought I'd do a little feature on David, because I don't want to say typical of a referee, but it does have similar traits to other referees that I've known. And I asked David how he got into refereeing, and he said, well, I started at 15 in 1999. He's now 29, 30 years old. He was one of three people that was recognised as probably going to go all the way in terms of getting to FIFA. But for David's own reasons, one was because he's a musician as well, he didn't progress with refereeing, and he had a break. But his other two friends that were highlighted at the time got onto FIFA, are on FIFA, and David has aspirations to get back to that status. But the unfortunate side of it is, after David's break, he tried to sort of plead with the authorities about an assessment, which was lost. And the assessment that he had would have helped his application towards promotion.
Ouch.
So he's got to go back to the basics and get back in there. But David,
I think there's something to be taken out of that. If you are a referee that wants to do well, but at the same time take a break from it, I think you need to weigh up where it could or could not go wrong for you by taking that break. I know a guy locally who was at level three, decided that he wanted to do other things in his life, and that set him back back to a level five. So he's obviously having to go through the routine again.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think you probably know who I'm talking about there.
Yes, I do. The thing with I would say to David, and I can't speak on behalf of the Canadian FA, but I mean, David, 30 years old, I mean, that's not old, David. That's a nice position to have as regards your age and the opportunities that are there for you. But David, in his description, I put a lot of time, money and effort into this and spent time travelling to games to make myself available whenever and wherever possible. He was keen to get on. Mm-hmm. He was, and that's what I say to referees. You know, be keen, be enthusiastic about it, be realistic, because it does take a while. It doesn't just come naturally because you've been refereeing for 3 years. You would automatically get promoted. Mm-hmm. You've got to earn that promotion, meet the promotion criteria, and there are lots of things in there that we can discuss at that. Conclusion with the email that with David, he says, my plan is in the next 5 to 7 years, I want to be on the national list in Canada. He's then listed for me the ways in which referees progress there. And it looks as though there's seven levels in which a referee will progress from. It begins from district, which he describes as an old class 3 referee, and that's from 16 years and up. And then you become a regional referee, which is the old class 2. Then you become a provincial referee, which is old class 1. You're then nominated to national. You then become a national official. After that, you can be nominated to FIFA, and you become a FIFA official. So there's seven stages there in Canada. And I'll be interested to hear any other structures, different to that, not necessarily similar, from around the world. You know, I'm always looking for information.
Shouldn't there be one uniform structure around the whole of the world, though?
Nice idea, but that would be quite boring, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but it would mean that every referee from every continent is of a similar standard. I mean, okay. The reason I mention this is because, again, okay, another can of worms here. This is my own personal opinion. I think that we have the best assistant referees in the world in our country. Now, if you look at some of these European games and you see some of the assistant referees that come from different countries, they're mincing around up and down the line and going on the pitch, and there doesn't seem to have that. Okay. Stature that some of the guys.
Fair comment. I can see why you're saying that.
Am I okay by saying that? Is that fair to say?
You're not out of order. You're making a constructive observation. Let me say.
Sometimes it looks like they're disinterested, or they're just not on the ball or paying attention.
Okay. What I do believe is that the level of performance for let's talk about assistant referees, because that's what you highlighted. I think the level of performance for assistant referees across the world over the last 3 or 4 seasons has improved immensely. Mm. Technically, they look better. Their movement is better. Their judgments and their decisions are better. And so consequently, that's coming out of FIFA. If they're FIFA referees, if they're UEFA referees, and you know, we do see them in the Champions League and the Europa Cup. Mm-hmm. I personally do believe that standards are improving. You know, whereby they looked a little bit sloppy. I think I can use that word.
That's exactly how I describe it.
They looked a bit too casual. Mm. They didn't look focused at times. Their body language wasn't as good as what we'd like it to be, and that's by our standards. So I personally believe that UEFA and FIFA, the standards have improved. There's no doubt about that. Pierluigi Collina, that famous referee from Italy, mm-hmm. He's had his influence on there. We've got our own David Ellery involved there. We've got Neil Barry involved with these committees. There is a strong influence of experienced referees involved in development of the next batch of referees and looking after those existing referees. So my personal belief I'm genuine with this. I think that the standards have improved. Mm-hmm. There's no question about that. Referees
World. It's the Referees World podcast with Darren Cullum and Richard Mellon. Thanks very much for listening. If you want to get in touch, as we say all along, please feel free through the website, refereesworld.co.uk. Right, okay, we're going to finish up this episode with a couple of match incidents, okay? One of them definitely involves me. In fact, I think they both involve me, don't they?
Do you want to own up to them?
Here's the scenario. Ball gets wellied towards the keeper and he takes one for the boys. He gets one right in the bread box, okay? So he's obviously coupled up in a bit of pain. So he's down.
Yeah, right? He's down. So he sustained an injury.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say.
You don't know from 20 yards what sort of injury it is, but you've got a suspicion, haven't you?
Yeah, he's obviously in a lot of discomfort.
He's not made any contact with a player.
Nope.
So there's not a foul involved here, is
there?
Nope. Okay, so he's gone down, he's injured, and he's almost motionless, mm-hmm. but he's got a little bit of a moan about him, you know, because he's, you know, it's not comfortable for him. So what did you do?
I think it was a general consensus on the field of play, and everybody just stopped because they knew that there was a chap down that was injured.
All right.
Okay. I then called in the first aid.
But you didn't blow the whistle?
I didn't blow the whistle.
Okay. So do you have to blow the whistle?
Do you have to blow the whistle? Well, he was obviously... No, I don't suppose you do.
No, you don't.
No.
No, you don't. You've got control of the situation. Everybody knows you've got control of the situation. So why blow the whistle and bring more unnecessary attention mm-hmm. to you? Oh, what's he blowing that whistle for now?
Yeah.
You know? So you recognise that the keeper's got a slight injury mm-hmm. And he needs some sort of attention, but you don't know what he actually needs. So consequently, on comes the trainer, does an assessment, and what happens from there?
We have a few minutes out where he's...
Did you ask him to go off?
No.
Why?
Because there was a change in the law recently.
And the goalkeeper?
And the goalkeeper can stay where he is.
Doesn't have to leave the field of play. A little bit of revision there,
Darren.
There you go. A little bit of revision.
So I got that bit right, Rich Mellon. Yeah,
well done.
Testing me there.
Yeah. Okay. So there we have. We've got the goalkeeper down, injured. He's taken one in the bread box. On comes the physio to help him recover. He does recover eventually. Mm-hmm. Now, you could have done a couple of things here, in my view. What I would ask you to think about, if he's gone down injured, you could do one of two things. You've already done the right thing in delaying the restart. But what else you could have done is perhaps call in the...
But is it officially known as a restart because I didn't stop it?
You delayed. How long was the delay, do you think?
It was a good 3 minutes.
Well, there you go. That's a reason enough to have a restart.
Right.
You have to have a restart in that circumstance. You know, he's not gone down momentarily. He's gone down injured. And so consequently, if you want a technical restart, then go for a goal kick. Call in the centre forward and say, kick the ball out of play mm-hmm. for me. Kick the ball out of play, a goal kick.
Or drop ball.
There's your restart.
Yeah.
Or, if you don't want to call in another player, just restart game with a drop ball.
Yeah.
That's what you should have done, Darren.
Okay.
As opposed to letting him continue with the ball in his hands, kicking it from his hands.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay.
There we go.
Match incident number two, which I very, very nearly forgot what it was, but it was about match abandonment. Now, can I set the scene here?
Set the scene, please.
Okay. It's a midweek game. 6:30 kickoff. Obviously, nighttime is drawing in. Okay, so we needed to get things done and dusted. There were a few things that went on through the game which kept the time ticking. Okay, I was obviously conscious of this, and on 84 minutes, there was quite a nasty injury, and I think the player was down for a good 5 minutes or so, and it got to the point where. Personally, I felt that to continue in the light that was available would have been a bit dangerous. Even though there's only 5-6 minutes left, it's often the case, isn't it, that you have a great game of football, then in the last couple of minutes, that's bang, that's when something nasty happens.
Yeah, yeah.
And my assistants both told me that they were struggling to see properly across the field of play as well. And I decided to abandon the game.
Okay, let's confirm a couple of things then. It's a 6:30 kickoff and mm-hmm. you haven't got floodlights.
Yeah.
The game's being played in August mm-hmm. and daylight is starting to fade at about 8:20, 8:15?
No, a bit before that.
A bit before
yeah,
that.
About
okay,
8:20,
so just after 8 o'clock
yeah.
then. Okay, so there we go. You've got 90 minutes to play with a 6:30 kickoff. Let's go through the stages here. No floodlights. So you've never got that that chance to play the game.
We actually kicked off at 6:33 as well because there were a few players that were late because of work commitments and one thing and another.
Right. Okay.
Oh, so, I got that look now.
What, yeah. So you didn't kick off at 6:30.
Yeah, okay. All right.
You kicked off at 6:33.
Yeah.
What sort of time allowance did you have for half time?
Half time, we kept it quite tight because. We were conscious. I think it was just under 10 minutes.
10 minutes. Did you need 10 minutes? Did the players leave the field of play?
Yeah, they did.
Okay. So was it 10 minutes inside or 10 minutes inclusive of leaving and re-entering?
Okay. See where you're going with this
okay,
one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So if you're trying to trim time and find time and you abandon the game after 84 minutes, you lost 6 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Where can you get these 6 minutes back?
You've
already labelled 2 points for me.
Obviously at half time.
Okay,
let's go
back beginning of the game.
Mm-hmm. Starting on time. Quite possibly, if the teams agree with it, start a little bit before as well.
If that was possible.
If that was possible.
Of course, yeah, kick off at 6:25. You know, if there was problems, you know, that's when you become a little bit proactive rather than reactive.
I think as well, it's worth pointing out that I did have an issue with a club official.
That also delayed the game. But what other additional time did you add to the game? What about stoppages, ball out of play? Did you have much of that?
From memory, I think it was probably no, not a lot.
How honest were you? And I'll be careful with that quote. How honest were you with time added on?
Well, it depends.
Let me say to you again, let's ask another question. How officious were you with time added on?
I wouldn't say generous. I was conscious of what was going on around me in terms of light times and stuff. But at that point, from memory, I don't think any substitutions had been made in the first half either, so I could wrap it up quite quick.
Yeah. Okay. No injuries?
No injuries. No
substitutions?
But there was an incident. So
why did you play two extra minutes on the first 45?
Because of the incident which took place.
Too fussy, referee. You're too fussy.
Okay.
Okay.
You sounded really camp then when you did that.
Edit that bit out there.
No, let's keep it in.
But have a look at where you can save time. Better management. Better time management. You kicked off 3 minutes late. You added time on at the end of the first half. Did you actually need to?
No.
You allowed 10 minutes for half time. I know what the regulations say and the laws of association football say about half time breaks. But at the end of the day, if you have a concern about failing light, then you've got to sort of be proactive and rather than become reactive when failing light has caused the problem. Now, if you go back to leaving the field of play at half time, coming back onto the field of play at half time, could you have asked the players to stay out? Could you have reduced it to 5 minutes, 6 minutes, maybe? You know, they still have their opportunity to have a chat about their tactics, their team, looking back over the game. And then, hopefully you would have pulled that in and not had to abandon a game after 84 minutes. Abandoning a game for 84 minutes is really something that, you know.
The big thing that I learned here was my recollection of it was after 70 minutes, the score would stay the same. And then, obviously, having looked back through the rules
of
competition,
I didn't set the competition rules.
So there was a lesson there to be learnt for me because that game now has to be replayed, and the home team were winning 2-0, and it was a local derby. So obviously,
And this is senior league football, isn't it? It's not grassroots football where the competition rules may say, well, our result will stand because you played more than 70 minutes. Yeah. This is a serious senior league competition and they want a game played to the conclusion.
Yeah.
And in 6 minutes, two goals, a 2-2 draw was possible.
Mm-hmm.
So, have a look at it. Have a look how you manage your time. Trim time wherever you possibly can. Don't add time on just because you think you need to. Don't be the only person in the ground that thinks you need to play 2 minutes. You know, if it's 2 minutes, play 2 minutes by all means. Mm-hmm. Make it obvious. Make sure people understand. You know, but don't find time just for the sake of hanging out the game, especially if you're enjoying the game, which is, you know, sometimes you don't want the game to end. Competition rules will differ per competition. Mm. So don't assume that because you referee in a county cup, it's the same competition rules as if you were refereeing the teams in the league. I've got one question I want to ask before we close. David Figliano, who we've already discussed, has asked a question about electronic flags. Now, I cannot give David any information. I've had a chat with Paul Regier, who is our select group coach for assistant referees for the PGMO, and Paul doesn't know of the Ervocom diamond pattern flags, and he asks what's the best brand. He says he knows we use the Touchline flags here in the UK, but wants to know about the B&D Ervocom diamond pattern flags as a comparison. Does anybody out there know of the Ervocom flags? I'd like to hear from you. If you do, we'll make a comparison. I'll help David make his judgment on which set he's going to buy, because that was the reason for his question.
If you can help out, then drop us an email through the website, refereesworld.co.uk, or you can tweet us. Follow us if you're not already doing so, at Referees World. And, of course, we're on Facebook as well.
This is the Referees World podcast.
So before we shoot, we just want to let you know of a few things coming up in future episodes. Rich, what you got?
Yeah, I've got a couple of things for future episodes. We're going to discuss the Your Say questions. Can you remember the Your Say event that we had, Darren?
Yeah, it was a presentation by Kevin Friend. And we also had various other things going on that particular evening. We were given, it was like a mini exam, really, wasn't it?
It was like that. We were asked questions, which created debate.
Mm-hmm.
And Kevin was our guest speaker down here at Somerset. But I do know that the same questions were posed to all referees across England. Mm-hmm. It was a Your Say event held in each county earlier in this year. Ours was back in April, and we're going to debate some of those questions that came up, and they do relate to the RAFA, so we'll cover those in the next podcast. Something else that we're going to talk about and catch up with information on is the RAFA Youth Council. Mm. Now, I know Tom Neild, the chairman, young Tom, 21 years old, is chairman of the RAFA Youth Council. He's been very busy recently promoting the ideas of what the Youth Council was going to represent. And hopefully we'll give an update for all our young listeners. Tom Neild is the chairman, and they would love to hear from you. Have a look on Twitter. They're there on RAFA YTH Council. So you can contact them there.
And finally, we need to talk about the Young Referees Development Programme and how the podcast could help develop you and those that are part of that programme, because we'll be working alongside the FA for this, Rich.
Yes, we are. I've been having conversations with Roger Vaughan, and we had the early conversations a couple of months ago with Ian Blanchard and Dean Moharab. Now, we progressed to the situation whereby I think everybody knows that the Referees World podcast was a feature at the Young Referees Development Programme back in July. And the young referees have been instructed that the podcast will play a part in their development. And we're going to work with the FA on that. We're going to do the production with a script from the FA using some topics for development. And the young referees will be expected to download information. But this, the Referees World podcast, is going to be used in conjunction with the FA development for these young referees. So it's available to all referees, but these young referees will be expected to give some feedback through their journal.
So you know what to do if you know somebody who doesn't listen to the Referees World podcast. Get them to listen, simple as. You can listen to us through iTunes. Just search for Referees World, and then you can subscribe to the podcast for free. It'll automatically update once there's a new episode onto your iPhone, your iPad, your iThis, your iThat. You can listen online as well at refereesworld.co.uk.
The download is complete.